Heart. You gotta have heart. Miles and miles of heart.
What is heart? Heart is running through a return man when the game is on the line. Heart is giving everything you have in practice, day after day. Heart is finding the strength to run down the field one more time when you can barely breathe. The heart in me pumps Husker Red.
Hello and welcome to a brand new episode of the Five Heart Podcast, brought to you by CornNation.com, hosted on JitteryMonkey.com, part of the Jittery Monkey family of podcasts. And remember, you can get Jittery Monkey Podcast Network merchandise at JitteryMonkey.com/shop, including the Five Heart logo, as well as an Iowa Sucks t-shirt. I highly recommend both of those. And we're going to get some more Five Heart themed merchandise up there in the coming weeks. Haas doesn't even know about it, but without him, we wouldn't even have this saying. And that is going to be coming up soon to the shop, the Incremental Improvement shirt. And and that's so far the only one I've got in mind. Haas Reuter is joining us once again, as well as John Damn Johnston. And from the Eastern time zone, though, we won't hold that against him. Rick Cohn, and gentlemen, welcome back to the show. I know it's been a couple of weeks for some of you and longer for one of you.
Yep. Well, for me, it's just been 1 week.
Well, I don't remember the last time I was on because I'm old and senile.
Yeah, well, tell us something we don't know.
Less old, but just as senile, and didn't remember the last time I was on either. Caught up.
All right. So everybody's here, and we're going to talk mostly recruiting and the early signing period, which, as we record this, the early signing day was, you know, the Wednesday of this week. Of course, this episode drops on Friday. But before we talk football recruiting, we do want to mention, of course, the Husker women's volleyball team and their national championship run. Of course, when I talked with Ty last week, he was in Minnesota, or I think about he was about to be in Minnesota for the Final Four, and of course was there watching as Nebraska handled business against Iowa in, or not Iowa, they're not that good, Illinois in the semifinal, and then came up a little short in five sets to top-rated Stanford. Tough loss, but you know, Nebraska's got a lot coming back. John, talk to me. You were there, of course, getting some fantastic photography. And what was your takeaway from the not really just the weekend, but you know, 2 weekends spent watching college volleyball?
I really love volleyball. I mean, seriously. I mean, it's
don't we all?
No, I mean, here's the thing: you go out and take a camera and shoot sports, and there's certain sports that you just. Yeah, I like college baseball, but when you get into a game of college baseball and you get like a pitcher's duel, you spend 9 innings taking pictures of like a guy throwing a ball to a catcher that catches it. In volleyball, there's action all the time, and it's extremely fast action. I mean, it's I enjoyed the hell. What is so funny about that?
I thought you were going to say something else when you said action.
Oh, well, good God, you filthy-minded whatever. Anyway, I mean, it was exciting. I mean, I was going to almost say that. You're not old enough to be a curmudgeon. I mean, the regional at the Maturi Pavilion, which is where the Gophers play. I mean, the Gophers lost to Oregon in their second set 41-39, which is a MAC football score or a Big 12 football score, although a little low for a Big 12 football score. I mean, that was probably one of the more exciting sporting events in a compressed period that I've ever been to. The crowd at Maturi was good. The Husker fans showed up there, and then they showed up again at the national title matches or at the Final Four. And I think that part, I think, surprised not Nebraska fans, but a lot of people up here who found out that the Final Four was sold out, and they were surprised that it would be sold out for a volleyball event. But the crowd was excellent. It was a really, really fun time, except for, you know, the final outcome was, you know, kind of a downer. But at the same time, when you're looking at a team that's made, what, 4 Final Fours in a row?
Yep, and in fact, a couple of history makers on this team in Kenzie Maloney, cool down, Haas, and Michaela Fecky who I think if I'm correct, and I might not be, but I think that was part of the history is, you know, there those two players playing in four straight Final Fours and three national championship games in 4 years. This is, you know, we've used the term dynasty, and we can't even, you know, we don't use it lightly. But John Cook has, you know, no pun intended, but really has something cooking there in Lincoln. Shut up, Internet. I said no pun intended. It's just the word I went with. But he's done some really phenomenal things. And these, you know, ladies on his team, I think, really love playing for him. And that shows. And I think next year they're going to be even better, which, you know, when you think about, you know, finishing second in the national, you know, losing the national championship game, essentially finishing second, it's hard to say, come back and say, well, they're going to be even better next year. But they lose three seniors, and really two of them were everyday contributors. They have a lot of talent coming back, and I'm saddened, as I know John and Haas and Rick are all saddened, that the biggest loss that we're feeling at Coronation is Ty, who's stepping down from volleyball duties, understandably so. Not just volleyball duties; he's leaving Coronation altogether. He's got a young family and plenty of going on in his life, and he's, you know, made that decision to spend more time there, prioritize a little. And I don't fault him for it, but we certainly will miss him.
True, we spent Saturday having lunch at Brett's Pub, which is a nice, well, a British restaurant downtown Minneapolis. And then we went over to another brewery to have a few beers with an old friend of his. And it was nice to see him and talk to him for a while. And I did buy him lunch, which I haven't bought any of you sons of bitches. So take that.
Yeah, you have not.
You haven't even.
I got a long memory.
I don't want to sound like a complainer, but I haven't even received my company Christmas card from you yet with my $10 prepaid Visa gift card. So I don't know if that'll even make it here by the holiday.
Yeah, John, could you do me a favor and talk to someone in the AD to see if you can get me one of those hats that has the N on it and says football underneath of it, like Frost wears?
Are they that unique?
I haven't seen them anywhere.
I'll make you one.
Oh God!
It's got to be Adidas.
Okay, well, I have some sweatshops of my own.
I knew you did. That's what the winos do.
This might be spelled a little like more like Adidas, but you know it's kind of close.
Four stripes, or two stripes.
You get what you pay for.
Well, let's turn the page to quote Bob Seger and the Silver Bullet Band. And talk a little, which it's my understanding that east of Omaha is Iowa, and so I felt really bad for Bob Seger as he was writing that song.
But you know what I love about that song in the live version, I think it was recorded in Dallas, when he says east of Omaha, you can hear someone just go, "Woo!" And like my imagination being what it is, I just imagine some guy like in 1973 from Omaha, he's at the concert. And he says east of Omaha, and he's like taking a swig off his beer really fast, trying to down it. And he's just, whoa, you know. So, yeah.
Well, as I mentioned, the day that we're recording is early signing day, and Nebraska is, had a good number come out. And Rick, you've done a phenomenal job all day long in chronicling the faxes of letters of intent were sent in. What time did you get up this morning?
I got up at 5:45 to have everything ready, but that's East Coast, you know, so I don't know if that really counts.
Sure it does, because that means it was 6:45 in the Central Time Zone, according to your math.
Is that right, or is it like 11 a.m.?
No, it's... No, that's 4:45. I've done this all day. Do my maths backwards. That'd be 4:45 your time.
It was great. We were getting everything set up, you know, and finalizing the time to record tonight. And he says 8:30, right? I said, yeah. He said, your time or my time? And I said, my time. And he says, okay, I'm ready. He was thinking that we were like an hour ahead, or he thought we were an hour ahead of him, which would put us out in the Atlantic Ocean, which is not how I plan to live my life. But no, so 4:45 Central, the only time zone that matters. What in the hell is going on in my son's room? So anyway, we got some recruits who something just floated past the monitor. I'm really concerned that there's a ghost up there. We had some recruits sign up. A lot of them. This is going to be the fun part where I kind of sit back and listen and let you guys talk. But real quick, I mean,
do I get to ask questions?
Yeah, you absolutely. Do that. I'm going to go. You ask questions. I'm going to go check on my son.
Okay.
This will be fun.
So overall, what do you two recruiting expert guys think of this class?
I think it's a solid foundation.
Oh, yeah.
It's not, you know, there's not a lot of big names, you know, like at the skill positions with the exception of, you know, Wandale Robinson. But it's guys that you can really build a solid nucleus around, like Michael Lynn, Matthew Anderson, Bryce Benhart, the commit who I can't even pronounce his last name, the tight end offensive tackle from South Carolina.
Fritchie.
I grew up with Fritchies in my hometown.
So, yeah, those are guys that can develop. Fritchie and Michael Lynn, those kind of guys, Matthew Anderson, those guys will probably need some development in the weight room. But you've seen Iowa in the past, you know, almost two decades, turn high school tight ends into really, really, really athletic and talented offensive tackles. So I'm excited about that. And Zach Wiegert was a high school tight end from Fremont Bergen, you know, way back in the day. So I like what converted tight ends can bring to that position. And then, of course, you know, the crown jewel of the class, at least in my opinion, Bryce Benhart.
Yes, absolutely.
That guy is a day one starter.
Wow, out of Lakeville North.
Yep. I mean, that you don't see too many high school offensive linemen or college offensive linemen built like that early in their careers. I mean, he's built like Big John from the Jimmy Dean song, you know, kind of broad at the shoulder and narrow at the hips. Like, that's the build for a guy like Benhart, and he's a guy that can probably jump right in. I wish he was an early enrollee, but last I heard, he's chasing down another state heavyweight wrestling championship up in Minnesota. So he'll be here in May, and I think that he's got the skills to step in at that right tackle spot and allow us to move Matt Farniok inside to guard.
That's the way I see it, too. I mean, you don't see true freshman tackles hardly ever unless a team is desperate.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know that that doesn't describe us, but he is just – his frame is already there. And like Haas said, he's not like a big fat kid. This is a guy who can move. Mm-hmm. I spent a lot of time watching film in this job, and he runs and moves and pulls and goes to the second level and puts a guy on the ground, goes to the next level, puts that guy on the ground. That I can't believe that he's a three-star, to be honest with you. The only thing I can think is that he didn't make the camp circuit a priority, and he's paying for it. This guy has got to be the biggest get. I don't care about Wandale Robinson. I know he's going to be fantastic, and he's going to have highlight reel after highlight reel. Bryce Benhart means more to this offense than any other recruit on that side of the ball.
Absolutely.
Okay, well, that ruined my next question, which was, who's your favorite guy out of this draft? You're both picking Bryce Benhart.
Well, I'd say Bryce Benhart, and 1B is Ty Robinson.
Okay, we'll talk about him.
I mean, not too often you can beat out Alabama for a defensive end, and especially not too often when you're coming off of a 4-8 season and Alabama's playing in, you know, yet another Alabama Invitational that is, you know, inappropriately named the College Football Playoff. And so anytime you can get a guy like that, especially a guy who's another kind of ready-made player, you know, he's 6'5", 260 pounds. And let's pump the brakes on this next part because it's going to sound, you know, very hyperbolic, but that was Grant Wistrom's build at Nebraska by the time he was a senior, 6'5", 260 pounds. And he's probably he's a similar player to that. He's a disruptive pass rusher. He's probably not going to have those opportunities at Nebraska to get after the quarterback just because he's going to be playing that inside four eye technique on the inside shoulder of an offensive tackle. But he's an upgrade over a lot of guys that we have on the roster already. Just with, you know, signing Ty Robinson and who else was it that I said in the Slack room earlier today? I think it was my phone would load.
Wait. Rick?
Yes?
Pick a guy not named Bryce Benhart or Ty Robinson, and who's your next favorite guy on the list?
Who's my next favorite guy on the list? Oh, goodness. You make this so hard. Jamie Nance. Ooh. Jamie Nance, wide receiver for out of Blanchard, Oklahoma. He is going to be fast. He is the guy that is going to replace Stanley Morgan.
Yeah, what's Nance run? Like a 10.2, 100 meter? Something just insane.
I think he had a 10.66, 100. But
still blazing fast.
In his press conference today that Scott Frost talked about was he wants to get Jamie Nance here where he can time him electronically and see what he's really got because he has so much speed.
But that's a huge aspect, something that we're really actually missing in this offense this year. You know, the big play threat. We saw Greg Bell get ran down against Colorado. While Divine Ozigbo had a great burst, you know, coming out of the hole, he wasn't the fastest, you know, top end guy. Neither was J.D. Spielman. So getting a guy like Nance, that's kind of where you start seeing some of those things from UCF in 2017 with a guy like Adrian Killens, you know, start to come together and coalesce in Lincoln.
Okay, next. Are you done?
I'm waiting for the next question.
Okay, here's the thing. And I don't, this is going to sound negative to people, but I want you guys to be honest with your answers. We gave 5 players from Nebraska scholarships. Okay, do I need to name them off?
No, I got them.
Nick Hendrick, nope. Chris Hickman, tight end out of Omaha, Ethan Piper, athlete out of Norfolk, and Garrett Snodgrass, linebacker out of York. Do we really need to give 5 players from Nebraska scholarships? Are these guys really – I don't mean to be – well, yes, I do. I'm challenging you. Are we giving guys Nebraska scholarships just because they're from Nebraska, or are they actually worthy of scholarship offers?
Well, you know that I've never been big on, you know, giving guys scholarships strictly because they're from Nebraska. While they might care more about the program, you know, intrinsically – you know, it's not always something that, you know, can be, you know, is proven empirically on the field. You know, speed and talent trumps all. You know, if a guy wants it bad enough, you know, but he is not faster than Usain Bolt, he's not going to beat Usain Bolt in the foot race. But that being said, the 5 guys that we offered scholarships to and they accepted and signed are all good football players. Tom Lemming was saying that if Garrett Nelson out of Scott's Bluff played, you know, in a more populated area, he'd be a 5-star because he is the kind of athlete. He dominates a Class B football game like a 5-star athlete should and would. Garrett Snodgrass is a very athletic running back / linebacker. I think Ethan Piper is a guy who turns into an offensive lineman by the time his career is over. Then you got the 2 guys out of Omaha, Burke, Henrich and Hickman, who Nick Henrich, he's the kind of linebacker that was born to play in the Big Ten Conference. You know, on a shitty gray sleet day in late November, he's the kind of guy who's meeting a fullback or a pulling guard in the hole and disrupting the play. I mean, there's a reason why Iowa and Wisconsin were so hot after him.
He's our highest rated commit. Of this class.
Is he really?
Yes, he is. He's our he's rated higher than Wandale Robinson. He's rated higher than Ty Robinson. He is highest ranked in Rivals and 247 in our player. He is our showpiece player, Nick Henrich. So there's a lot of quality here. The only player that I would say would possibly be a reach, maybe, would be Ethan Piper, but he doesn't have a position. Mm-hmm. But, like, I see him, I see it the same way that Haas does. He's going to end up on the offensive side of the ball, and he's going to be developed. He can't be worse than Cole Conrad. And the other thing about Ethan, though, and this is an intangible, okay, and this is Haas alluded to this. Ethan Piper once wanted to be a Husker, probably worse, whatever you want to say, than any other person that signed his papers today. He was a Husker since the day he was born, just like us. The only team he wanted to play for was Nebraska, and he's going there, and that attitude is going to cause him to work harder. And although he was never going to win the Outland or whatever the defensive Outland, you know, he's not going to win the Remington, he's not going to win the Outland or something like that, but he is going to work harder and try harder and give more, and that's good. That counts for something.
It does.
So really, when it comes down to you, this son of a bitch is winning the Outland in 3 years, so you'll look like a butt.
Oh, he's kind of one of those guys that
I do
going in, you know, plugging into the center position, developing. I mean, he's a great athlete,
and
Lord knows that this staff, you know, if you look at their offensive line recruiting, with the exception of Ben Hart, they like guys who they might be undersized, but they have good frames that can develop. And as Zach Duvall's proven during his time at UCF, during his time training Khalil Mack at Buffalo, and now in 1 year in Lincoln, he's the guy that's able to develop them. Then you got Greg Austin doing the on-field coaching. And so, you know, taking a flyer, so to speak, on a guy like Ethan Piper, it could pay off in dividends. Just like, you know, Fritchie, just like guys like that.
I'm glad you said
Brant Banks. I think Brant Banks ends up being on the offensive side of the ball as well.
I'm glad you said frame because, like Rick said, you know, Ethan Piper may not have a position right now, but the first thing that I think of when I see him is kid's got a frame. I mean, in that strength and conditioning program, they're going to build him into, you know, whatever they need him to be. And I could see him being, you know, for lack of a better term, one of those big hosses up front. And, you know, it dude just looks – as I was scrolling through, you know, Coronation.com's excellent early signing day coverage, and I came across that picture, I'm like, holy cow, look at that kid's arms. And, you know, if he's got some good footwork and you know, like Rick said, the intangible of wanting to be a Husker since the day he was born and, you know, waiting his whole life for the moment that he had today at, you know, 7:30 this morning, whatever it was that he, you know, sent in his LOI, I think he's going to put in the work. I think he'll outwork, you know, a lot of other people to, you know, earn that spot and earn that playing time. I almost agree with John's assessment. I don't know if there's a trophy in his future, but I think he's going to end up being a leader because as a taking nothing away from the other Nebraska kids, but as that one who, you know, like Rick said, more than any wanted to be a Husker, who didn't, you know, necessarily entertain offers from anywhere else, kind of knew, had his mind set, he's going to be a leader because he understands what it means to be a Husker.
Like Ethan Piper, just if he can build into being, you know, develop into being an offensive guard or a center, even if he doesn't crack the starting lineup, that kind of athleticism is something that I'd love to see as like a short yardage H-back within Frost's offense, kind of similar to things that Matt Nagy is doing with the Chicago Bears offense and goal line sets, you know, lining up in the pistol or shotgun, eligible receivers at tight end or H-back or just offensive linemen. That's something that I think would be a good short yardage package in Frost's offense, and I think that Piper's the kind of guy that fits that mold.
no pressure, but perhaps in the future, Ethan Piper line.
Catches a touchdown to beat, you know, Alabama in Indianapolis in January of 2022.
Yep.
Okay, another name.
Devin Wright.
No. I get to say the name this time.
Okay,
Lord.
Say a name.
Okay, no, you guys have not mentioned Luke McCaffrey at all.
I was going
and,
to, but you
and but your position has been a usurped guy that has to check on his kid.
Here's, you know, here's the whole thing with Luke McCaffrey. It's just such a goes back to kind of what we were talking about with Piper. He doesn't really have a position right now. Yes, he was recruited as a quarterback, but there are things that he's going to have to develop into that position in Lincoln. He could also play receiver. He's just got great athleticism. And when you look at it, you're kind of going, well, he's going to be behind a guy named Adrian Martinez for a while. So I think that's kind of what contributes to the overall radio silence on a guy like Luke McCaffrey.
I just don't like talking about quarterbacks. I was a lineman and a linebacker. So
really what you're saying is you didn't get any chicks and the quarterbacks got them. And you still, after all these years, resent this. It's really what's coming out there. It's not even subtle.
Buddy Ryan, in his 1985 Chicago Bears defensive playbook, has in the opening pages, it says, quarterbacks are overpaid, pompous bastards and deserve to be put on their back every play. I thought that way about quarterbacks when I was, you know, a undersized defensive lineman. But in the modern game, quarterbacks are worth their weight in gold. And
you got past your problems with no dates in high school.
Yeah, quarterbacks always get all the dates. You know, I can barely throw a football 30 yards.
Anyway, Luke McCaffrey, who probably had more than his share of dates in high school, comes from an impeccable athletic pedigree, right? And I think he is the perfect recruit for a quarterback in this class. And this is why. Because he knows that he needs development. He only played 1 year as a starter because he was behind a college quarterback that was behind another college quarterback. And this is the first year that he actually got any playing time. He knows that he needs development. He knows that he needs to redshirt. And that way, he might actually stick around. And as we've seen, quarterbacks don't like to stick around if they're not starting. But he will. So that's going to be great because we're actually going to have a backup quarterback. Heck, our third string quarterback is transferring this year. Our second string transferred before the season even started. Third string wants to transfer now. We got to have somebody who will stick around. I think Luke McCaffrey will do that. And, you know, his older brother is a quarterback in Michigan. His older brother was a running back at for Stanford and now the Carolina Panthers. His mother was an Olympian. His father was an Olympian. His grandfather was an Olympian. I don't know. They're all Olympians in that family. So.
It's like they were selfish and took it all. Like my family didn't get shit. I got no Olympians anywhere.
It's like you joke about how Nebraska needs to take all their All-American football players and arrange marriages to all the All-American volleyball and basketball players and have all those kids. So, you know, you have this athletic generation factory, you know. And they actually did it. So that's the McCaffreys. We're getting the last one. I think he's going to stick around for a while. I think he played a good season this year. They won the national championship. Their team won the state championship against quality competition. He was solid. He had a high completion rate. I subscribe to the Mike Leach philosophy that you can't teach accuracy. So he's already accurate. I mean, I think he'll be a good player, and he'll stay. So Adrian Martinez is probably going to go pro after his junior season. This guy redshirts, he can start as a junior and a senior, and I think he'll be ideally positioned to do so.
I agree.
Let's
Greg comes out of development, but then there's a guy behind him named Logan Smothers who's going to be pretty damn good.
Greg, did you actually want to say something?
Who, me?
Greg.
Greg?
I was going to say, let's pump the brakes on talking about Adrian Martinez going pro after his junior year. I'm not ready for that yet.
Before we can talk about that, Adrian Martinez has to lead us on a 50 points per game slash and burn through the Big Ten West.
We at least have to make a bowl.
Well, that's the first step. Incremental improvement.
Yeah.
Okay. You know what else strikes me about this recruiting class?
No.
Hey, John, can I ask you a question real quick?
Yeah, go ahead.
How'd it feel to drop that potential interception on Sunday night against the Philadelphia Eagles?
You know what else strikes me about this recruiting class?
Hey, John, let me ask you a question.
Were you not watching the game?
No, I was in mourning after the volleyball loss.
There was a DB named John Johnson.
I remember that bastard because I used to get his email.
For the LA Rams. And
he got a lot more offers from women than I ever did.
You know what? You got one thing going for you though that he doesn't. You didn't get burned repeatedly Sunday night.
Well, that is true.
Hey John, can I ask you a question?
Oh God, what?
What else strikes you about this Husker recruiting class?
You know what else strikes me about this Husker recruiting class? The English is hard. That's what strikes me, but look at the places for all these players. I mean, you've got Louisiana, Texas, Minnesota, Washington, Georgia, South Carolina, Alabama, Tennessee,
Nebraska,
New Jersey, Colorado, Oklahoma, Iowa, Arizona. I mean, you got this is everywhere.
It's like Mike Riley said,
we're America's team.
It's like the coaching staff.
That?
The coaching staff was the Johnny. It's like this coaching staff was the Johnny Cash song, I've Been Everywhere, Man.
Yeah.
We're connected psychically, Greg.
Were you thinking the same thing, Rick?
I was thinking exactly the same thing.
I'm telling
you. That's kind of terrifying.
Be afraid. Be very afraid.
We even pulled a walk-on out of Georgia.
I know. Watkinsville, Georgia.
That's where you know you're big time. You're pulling walk-ons out of state.
We just got a walk-on from Texas.
In-state ties.
Okay, I'm out of questions because that's all I know about recruiting. Well, but here's the thing I think about recruiting classes. I don't really start to care about these players until they don't get arrested by the time they arrive on campus for doing something stupid while they're still in high school.
Or they don't break a beer bottle over their teammate's head.
Yeah, that'd be good.
Or they don't show their wang to the cashier at the quickie
stop. Oh, God, let's not list crimes.
Multiple
this is like
times.
Giving people ideas.
I was giving you ideas.
Hey. They qualify academically. They show up. They do what's required of them to get them on the field. And then when they're on the field, I start to care about them. So what else is there about this recruiting class?
An NFL head coach.
You're damn right I would. I'm waiting for the phone call.
John Damn Johnston, head coach of the Chicago Bears.
I like the ring to it.
I mean,
with that mustache, he'd fit in with all the Chicago Bears superfans.
Well, let's talk a little bit about some of the players who didn't sign today, but that doesn't necessarily mean we've heard the last. One of the names that's been tossed around, and again, if you scroll down far enough on the excellent coverage on coordination.com on the early signing day, is Noah Pola Gates. What is his story? Because he essentially said, you know what, it's nice to be talked about, from Bama. It's just not, and this is a quote, it isn't a true fit for me and my family. So eliminating Alabama, but, Arizona State, Nebraska, and reportedly USC still in the mix. So what is it about Noah Pola Gates, and is it something that we're going to have to wait till February to get a response from him?
We're going to hear about him. He's going to announce at the Polynesian Bowl on January 19th.
Okay.
So, but he's going to sign in February. This is the story. He may have signed today, and everybody's just keeping it under wraps. They've been very good at controlling the flow of information out of the athletics office. I'll tell you that much. Things have taken me by surprise. It doesn't leak like it used to. Noah Gates is someone we really, really want. And I'm sure that everyone is going to hear it 112 billion times over the next 4 years, but his cousin, Kiana, plays softball for us. So there is already a family connection there to entice him to come. And family is important to him and to the Polynesian players in general.
Mm-hmm.
The other thing he's got going for him is we have a committable offer to his another cousin, Matthew Polamau. I'm probably butchering his, but he's a defensive tackle. He's 6'2", 280, something like that. Sounds like perfect measurables for a nose tackle. And he has a committable offer to Nebraska, too. And Nebraska is the only place where his cousin and him can both play ball together. I think we got a fighting chance here. And this guy is also a guy who is in the top 250 in the nation, high-ranking four-star, in a position where we desperately need an infusion of talent.
I hope we get him for one sole reason. He'd be the only funky named guy in this class, because when you look down this class, I look at the names – and they're all really kind of, other than like Ramir Johnson, I mean, you know what I mean? Every one of these names look like, I don't know, it came out of the name generator when you put generic character name on Red Dead Redemption or like Fallout 3 or something, you know what I mean? I'm not trying to insult these people, but there's no weird names in here. You always have fun with weird names.
Well, there's only one DiCaprio Boodle out there, John.
We do have a walk-on named Noah Stefurski from York, an offensive lineman. That's fun, right? So Pola Gates, that's the guy's name?
Noah Pola Gates.
It's
hyphenated.
It's hyphenated.
Yes, the matriarch and the patriarch.
Tell me again, John, that the name of that kid out of York who walked on?
Noah Stefurski.
That is a Big Ten offensive lineman name right there.
Sounds like kinda, you're eating brats on the south side of Chicago.
I was going to say, that's got, and I say this with a last name of Mahochko, so I hope I can get away with it, but that's got Polish written right all over it.
I tell you what, if he doesn't go pro, he's definitely going to be a mail carrier in a town with a lot of snow.
That's hurtful. And I like mail carriers. I mean, I know I have some of them who are friends, but I think saddling that type of career on him is just too soon. Too soon.
Yeah. That's an honorable trade. Unlike Mike Riley, mail carriers deliver on Saturdays.
Yeah. Plus that, they, you know what else? They get pensions. The sons of
pensions. They've got great retirement plans, 401k.
Yeah, fine. I don't get a pension.
I'd be healthy.
Sounds like a personal problem.
Yeah, it is.
Tell us how you really feel, John.
How I feel is I'll be working until the day I'm going to go, retire, and the next day I'll just be dropping dead.
Hey, speaking of not dropping dead, can I do a shout-out to a special person in my life?
Absolutely.
My mom.
You're usually in charge of this show.
Yeah, but that doesn't mean that anybody cares about what I have to say.
Yeah, you're the skipper, man.
My mom had her retirement party today, and bless her heart, she's been a registered nurse as long as I've been alive and worked for the same hospital. And I worked during the day, and she wasn't expecting me to get over to her retirement party. And I got there with about 10 minutes left, and it was like my sister met me at the door, and she said, people have been in and out. And then as we got closer to where the party was, she says it's pretty much just, quieted down now, and mom started cleaning up, and I'm like, oh, no. So I walk in there, it's basically just my mom and my dad, and then she sees me not expecting me, and she's visibly taken aback, like shocked that I made it there, and it was emotional. So I'm awful proud of my mom. She worked.
Yes, you should.
She worked, night shift when I was little, and I remember had a lot of time with her, you know, growing up, because she worked nights but was home during the day and whatnot. So, you know, we used to play He-Man and whatnot, you know, way back in the day and make s'mores after lunch. And so, you know, then she got normal hours like a normal human being. And, you know, she awful proud of her. And, you know, now she gets to relax at home with my dad. And we'll see how long that lasts before they start bickering back and forth from being with each other every day. But because he retired a couple years ago. But she doesn't listen. She knows what a podcast is. I've put a few on her phone, but she never listens to them. So she's not going to listen to this. But just awful proud of my mom, and happy retirement to her. So that's all. Moving on. Huskers.
Well, congratulations to her. But was she shocked because she just didn't know you were out of prison?
Wait, have you been Skyping with us from the Illinois Correctional Facility?
I can neither confirm nor deny. Let's just say that
that explains the Wi-Fi problems.
Yes.
We fixed that, fucker.
I know.
We got an upgrade. We used some of our tax dollars that didn't make its way into a politician's pockets. And now, so we have much better Wi-Fi, 3G LTE. I think that's a thing. And yeah, so... and by the way, when I say I got to go check on my son, it means I've got to prevent somebody from getting shivved in the showers. So
you're a man of the people, Greg.
I
so what were you in for?
I can't say. I'm innocent.
You were a bag man, weren't you?
I'm innocent.
That's why you're so anti-bag man now. You got popped by the feds.
What is it? What's the line in Shawshank Redemption? I'm innocent. My lawyer fucked me.
We're all innocent here.
That's right.
Yep. We're all innocent here. That's what it is.
Okay, I'm going with that.
So, any more? I mean, I don't really know if we need a dossier on each of these Husker recruits. We'll learn more about them over time. How many of them are able to, you know, go to Lincoln, you know, and do the early enrollee, you know, this upcoming semester? Anybody know?
I think it was like six. Wandale Robinson is one. Bryce Benhart is not. Oh, shoot. You're asking me the hard questions. There's like six, and if you look in my preview article for signing day week, they're all named.
Perfect.
So go on Coronation and look for my signing day preview article and read it, and that information is contained within. There's like about six to eight somewhere in there, and a couple of walk-ons as well.
Is there a list? I mean, are they listed that I can, you know, get to them?
Yes,
easily?
There is a list.
All right, hold on, because I've got the article pulled up right now.
Okay, well, wait a minute. Before I go ahead, but I don't know. Wait a minute. Go ahead. Whatever. Here's the thing. Did you guys pay attention to what else happened throughout the Big Ten?
No,
because I don't give an F.
I did some.
Except when we're dropping 50 points on them.
Okay, Rick. How did we do in the Big Ten compared to other classes?
So, Iowa flipped a recruit from Northern Illinois.
Ooh.
No. Yes. And they failed to flip a recruit from Northern Iowa. That's how Iowa did.
Well, that's interesting.
And, yeah. I was like, gosh, that's like us a few years ago. Ohio State lost two four-star recruits, one to Georgia, one to Bama, like their quarterback recruit and a five-star defensive end type guy. But they ended up signing some other five-star, so it didn't matter. Purdue moved up to 25th. They have a solid class, four-star recruits. They're Purdue's coming. Minnesota, there was a bunch of articles about how great their class was. It had one four-star recruit in it. Nebraska is still solidly in the talent lead, I guess you'd say, in the Big Ten West. But we dropped a few spots today overall, and a couple of the other teams moved up a little. But we're still first. Purdue is coming. That's going to be a game to watch in the coming years.
as long as Jeff Brohm's at Purdue and Scott Frost is in Lincoln, I think that's going to be one of the – it's going to blossom into a rivalry in the Big Ten West.
And I think it's going to be the most watchable game in the Big Ten West.
Oh, yeah, a lot of points.
I mean, how many times can you watch Iowa and Wisconsin punt at each other?
Well, if you're old like
scratch out your own eyeballs.
Defense.
I don't love defense, you son of a bitch. Well, I do love defense, but I want to see Scott Frost's team outscored at Purdue. I want to see 50-45. I'm okay with. I'll just shut up now.
I don't care.
Shut up for a minute.
I don't care if it's 50-45 or 24-23, as long as we have the 24 or the 50. But I think there's going to be some high flying teams.
Well, if we wouldn't have played such a bad third quarter against Purdue this year, that game would have gone to overtime tied at 42 in Lincoln. Yeah, we pardon the crass expression, but we couldn't quit stepping on our own dick for the entire third quarter.
I can't believe you said that. I'm offended.
No, that's a football guy saying right there.
I'm not offended. Can we talk about being offended real quick?
Sure.
Last
week.
And I don't know how much more recruiting talk we got, but we all saw the picture from Stanford's locker room.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Anybody in on this panel have like, not saying don't have a problem with it, but was anybody offended and like, oh my God, I can't believe, I mean.
Not in the least bit.
Not even a little.
Okay.
Like, I couldn't even feign any self-righteous indignance.
Sorry.
Like, I was horribly offended. Because it's my job to be the contrarian. And since you guys weren't offended, here's the thing. I noticed that this got played up a lot in Nebraska.
Of course it did.
And I felt it really took away from Stanford's victory. And it was really a shame that it got as much attention as it did. Ty covered it in his post game piece. I thought very well because he coaches. He also talks to former Nebraska volleyball players and existing Nebraska volleyball players because he's covered him. But I noticed where some of I'm not going to name names, but there's some guys in our just media stuff that really pander to Nebraska crowd is and play this up about how unsportsmanlike it was and how it was just evil and awful. And for God's sakes, it was in a locker room. Number one was probably never intended to see public light. Although God knows everything does these days with social media. I could see where people might be offended at the gun imagery but the rest of it, it was something to fire them up, I guess.
I
brought this up.
The gun looked like a blow dryer.
Well, wasn't the best,
Yeah, I mean, like a 9mm liberal arts school. Keyword arts.
Can I discuss what I was offended by? And I think I was the first person to notice this. The tree had two right hands.
Okay, that's just messed up.
No left hand.
I talked to the Stanford tree. He might have two right hands.
Is he a real douchebag?
No, he was a really nice guy, but that thing is so weird that it might have two right hands. I don't know.
Yeah,
I will ask this. I want to bring this up, and I brought it up today with a guy that I talk sports with that I work with, who's a Penn State alum. But are we more offended by this because it was women? I mean, that's an honest question.
That's actually a really good question.
Honest to God question for people who listen to this podcast, and I want you to write in or to comment on the website or something. But are we more offended by this because we don't want to see this kind of imagery from women? There, I don't know. Do we expect them to like have pictures of bunnies and rabbits and unicorns on their locker room wall? Are we disgusted with the fact that they might, I don't know, flip somebody off or use gun imagery?
I don't know. I think anyone who's ever pissed off a woman in their life knows that women can get pretty damn angry. And in a fierce competition like the college volleyball national championship game, I would expect their intensity to be on par with, a man's intensity.
Absolutely. These are fierce competitors that have been in this position their entire lives, just like anybody else. Why would it not translate to something aggressive and competitive on that whiteboard? I mean, it's just, they're competitors. It's not that they're women. They're just competitors. I don't think it should matter.
I think in the end, we started this show with me talking about the volleyball thing, and the sport is fast and wonderful. And I think really that I hadn't gotten to see a lot of volleyball over the past few years. And this year I saw a game at Devaney. I've seen multiple games at Maturi Pavilion, Minnesota, and now the national title run. What struck me most is just how unbelievably athletic these young women are when they're going up for a kill. It's like watching an NBA player going up for a dunk. I mean, and the blocking and the stuff like that. I mean, it's just like, holy crap.
Yeah, it's,
there you go.
I mean, it's intense. It makes it high drama and really fun to watch. And when you have Nebraska playing at this elite level and playing in the Final Four and the championship game, Nebraska, just like the football fans are very intelligent football fans, by and large, they're volleyball fans. I think, and this is going to come off sounding biased or homer, but I think our volleyball fans are the smartest fans in the country. And when the volleyball team is playing at that national level and it's televised, you get that ratings bump. So don't get me wrong. I think that, the network, ESPN or whomever it is, wants Nebraska volleyball to continue to make it to the Final Four every year, because they're going to see that spike in ratings, it bump spike. These are accidental volleyball wordings that just happen to be, keyed into, the conversation. But so it's fun to watch. It is fun to watch. I had the match on for a little bit and was listening to it, on the TuneIn app, the Huskers IMG channel or station at other times. So it's fun to listen to, but it's fun to watch. And John, like you said, it's nonstop action for the most part, and you don't get that type of hockey has few pauses, soccer or football has his few pauses, but volleyball is just it's always on the move. Very short breaks. It's certainly not like watching a baseball game. And really not even like watching football, which, I love to do. So it's worth it to anybody, I think, who enjoys, high competition, or competition at elite levels to follow volleyball and follow the Husker volleyball team if they're Husker fans. And I don't really know how to wrap that rant up, but I appreciate the airtime. Thanks. I'll hang up and listen.
Tip your waitstaff.
Well, what you're saying there is that if Nebraska wasn't in the Final Four, it would kill the ratings.
I mean, can you dispute that?
It was a volleyball pun.
Oh, kill! Oh, you dumb. Sorry.
Do I need to warn you people ahead of time?
You set it up, and I was unable to. I'm sorry. on that happy note, anything else we got?
No.
Well, we wanted to keep the show shorter, didn't we?
Well, we wanted to keep it under an hour and a half, according to Haas, and we're right about at an hour. So,
some closing thoughts then about signing day, and we'll end on that if you so desire.
Yes, closing thoughts.
Okay, so let's talk about this class in general terms. This is like first of all, even though Scott Frost thought that he started late, we signed 23 people today and have two more just waiting on review of paperwork. So got a lot done on this class. It was a low drama day for Nebraska. Didn't have flips and weird craziness happening like lots of Georgia and Alabama and Penn State, Ohio State.
And Florida State lost their quarterback to recruit to Mack Brown at North Carolina.
Oh, Miami. Things were happening out in the rest of the recruiting world, and all I had to do was just put signing day tweets in there. Then the next thing that I wanted to point out was just an observation. It seemed like 5 years ago when I, 7 years ago when I first started reading Corn Nation and actually following Nebraska football a little closer, when Brian was writing these articles, all these January guys that we were in on, they were all like, it was us and like Purdue when Purdue was bad, and like Central Michigan, you know, or UAB or Texas State or something like that. And we get these guys and Brian would have to say, well, you know, he doesn't have an offer list, but the coaches see something. I think we can develop him. I mean, there's a lot of reaches, a lot of guys that were like, well, they're on our team.
And then the Bo Pelini low hanging fruit.
Yes. And then, Mike Riley came and all these 5-star incredible people with online social media presences came, and there was all this pizzazz and flash and all that, and it just fizzled away like a dang, what's that thing you wave around on?
Sparkler?
Sparkler, thank you. Yeah, it just went away and there was just nothing left. And we had all these guys and we had all this hope, and then they just all went everywhere else. And when you look at this class, there's a lot of 3-stars. You know, we had like 6 or 8 4-stars, which is all right. But when you look at the 3-star guys, we were fighting Clemson for these 3-star guys and Alabama for these 3-star guys and TCU for these 3-star guys. We're it's a whole nother level of recruiting. You know, we're not recruiting against Wisconsin for linemen. You know, stuff like that. Mozai Newsome, defensive end. You know, we're fighting Wisconsin and Iowa for him. You know, that just, you know, he's a solid get. It's just a complete different level of recruiting than we used to see. So I think that the future is bright.
I agree.
That's, and then, so we'll talk about what's left. The coaching staff wants to take 30 people. You can take 25 in a recruiting class, and you can count 5 people back towards last class, and they have the ability to do that, and we have the spots. So they're wanting to take 30. So we got 25 on board, right? So that's 5 more spots. I think the names people need to be watching are, we need an outside linebacker that's a pass rusher. That's the one thing we do not have in this class yet, is that Apex Predator pass rusher. Is that what you call him, Haas?
Apex Predator pass rusher.
Yes, that's we true. Don't have Shaquem Griffin yet. We need a Shaquem Griffin clone, but he's not here. I think the names you're going to hear for that are Brandon Mack and Sunni Fanoa, another name that you'll appreciate, John.
Yeah.
Okay. Noah Pola-Gates, target number 1. Probably Matthew Pola-Gates, or Polamau, is because it's kind of a package deal. And then there's one more guy who's probably going to be a grad transfer. And we'll see how that goes. But that's probably what we're going to see between now and February 9th, the second signing day. And I think that's all I have for recruiting.
I like it. Haas, final thoughts?
Well, final thoughts, like I said earlier, it's a good foundational class, you know, in the trenches. Got some weaponry. Just need, as Scott Frost said this evening on Sports Nightly, you just got to, close out with some more receivers, pass rushers, corners, and, priority number one going into next season is fixing and bolstering the pass rush.
John, final thoughts.
Well, you know, when he was talking about, waving things around that fizzled out, I had a final thought there, but I'm going to let it go because this is a family-oriented podcast, you know, and I'm old and everything. And
are you talking about Avery Moss?
Well, yeah. Let's just move on now. Are we at the end? We're at the end.
Yeah, let's don't forget to tip your wait staff.
there you have it. That'll be it for this episode of the Five Heart Podcast. Thanks to Rick for joining us all the way from the East Coast, where things are an hour ahead there. Even though he thinks they're an hour behind. That's okay.
I just say don't be waving things around in public that fizzle out. It's really disappointing to people.
Okay. You know, that is important words to live by, John. Thank you for that.
Yeah, you're welcome.
Thanks, John.
Thanks. I'd like to pass that wisdom on sometimes.
Thank you to John Dam Johnston for the epic wisdom that he has bestowed upon us all. Although now I won't be able to sleep tonight. To Haas Reuter, as always, my name is Greg Mahochko, and this motley crew and I, we remind you this week and every week that Five Heart is all the heart you need. John?
Merry Christmas! Go Big Red!
Rick?
Win the damn off season.
WTOS. Win the I don't know.
You know, we should have figured out how that was going to go before we went.
WTDOS.
Win the damn off. Yeah, that works.
This is a production of the Jittery Monkey Podcast Network. For more jittery shenanigans, go to jitterymonkey.com.